This is The Pastor Wife Life, a podcast for pastor's wives. Our hope is to bring encouragement and inspiration to your pastor wife life. Life in the ministry is one of the most fulfilling callings there is, but it's also one of the most challenging. We believe that God has uniquely gifted you to fulfill this calling. Our lives will probably not look the same. Our families and churches may be very different, but I think we can all agree that God is good and He is faithful to gently lead us on this journey, providing everything we need to live the pastor wife life. I'm Jackie Garner, host of the Pastor Wife Life podcast, and you're listening to episode number 96, my conversation with Heather Creekmore. Heather is a pastor's wife, and she's the author of two books. And one of those books is what we're going to dive into today. That book is called Compared to Who, and it's all about body image. You guys, this is so power-packed with truths. You're probably going to want to listen to it more than once. It is just so, so good. I know you're going to want to connect with Heather, so check out the show notes at thepastorwifelife.com/096. So you can find out how you can connect with Heather. She's got a podcast, she's got a blog, and also how you can get a copy of her books because they're so good. I know you're going to want those. All right, let's get into my conversation with Heather. Heather, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to have you here today.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. It's so fun to be with you.
I've really been looking forward to this. When I started, I don't even remember exactly how we connected, honestly. I don't remember.
I think through your Facebook group.
It is through the Facebook group, because I know you're there. And then I like slowly became aware that you'd written books. And I don't even know how we got to this point. I reached out to you.
I said, hey, Jackie, I think you need me on your show.
That's exactly it. You said, I'm the best.
Yeah, I wasn't that bold.
But hey, I'm you mind so considering? Yes, you were very sweet and humble about it. So, but I'm so excited to talk with you today, because you have got a message that God's given you that it's not just for pastor's wives, but I love that we're going to be able to tailor this to pastor's wives. You're an author. You've put this down on paper. I have one of your books in paper. I don't know why I didn't order both of them. I don't know what I was thinking when I ordered. I just got excited because I saw somebody post a picture of your book and I'm like, oh, I got to have that. And I ordered it right then, not thinking, wait, let's order the other book too. And then Snowpocalypse. So nothing was coming through. So anyway, I haven't read your other book, which is actually the book that I really want to talk about today.
Okay.
But before we get to all that, I'd love for you to introduce everyone to your, wait, what? I'd love for you to tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Here's the thing too. Heather also has a podcast. So she totally knows what she's doing, and I'm really excited about that. And I'm going to be learning from her as we go. So Heather, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, it is great to be with you. Like you said, I've written books and I'm speaking in a podcast about the topic of body image and comparison, which frankly, Jackie, these are two topics that never in a million years would I have thought I would be talking about out loud with people or committing to writing, those kind of things. So that's kind of what I do professionally, if you will, although that sounds like a mighty big word.
I love your face when you said that. I wish people could have seen it.
Yeah, because really, so I'm a pastor's wife. We have four children and I homeschool them. They are ages 14, 13, 11, and 10. So if you do the math on that, I had four babies in 4 years, essentially, and no twins in there, which you probably could figure out by the dates of their ages. But I'm mostly a homeschool mom and a pastor's wife, but God, started opening doors for me to minister to women in these areas, I guess about 10 years ago. And it really came out of a work that he had done in my heart in these areas. And so I've just been trying to follow him and be obedient to what he's called me to in terms of, you know, talking about these issues and really encouraging Christian women to stop comparing and start living.
I love this. And I actually asked you a question before we even started, and we're going to go into that question actually on the episode. So I'm really excited. I felt like I was getting a personal counseling appointment with you. But because and you're you haven't given me the answer yet, so I'm just excited to hear what it's going to be. But tell us first, how did you become the pastor's wife?
So I love sharing this story because when I was 30 years old, I was not married. And I'll just actually let me back up just a little bit because this might be important for your audience. When I was 16 years old, I was at a youth camp. I was raised in church, Jackie, and I was at youth camp. And the pastor from stage said, some of you are called to be pastors and some of you are called to be pastors' wives. And God spoke to me like that very night. Like I can picture every detail of the room. God spoke to me that night and said, you're going to be a pastor's wife someday. And so this was 16. And I spent the next 14 years dating everyone who was never going to be a pastor. not necessarily out of any kind of rebellion. Like I was completely open to that. But like the right guy hadn't come along. And I was like, okay, you know, my 20s are ticking away. You know, my heart is to be married. Maybe somehow you'll make this guy a pastor someday. Who am I to judge? Right. And so so I dated different guys through my 20s and lots of heartache, lots of heartbreak. But at age 30, I decided, okay, it's time to get serious about this finding a man thing. And I went on eHarmony.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so within a couple months, I was connected to a Marine fighter pilot. I mean, when you see Marine fighter pilot come up as a possibility, I don't know. In my mind, I'm like, yes, check here. I will let me investigate that further. So I was like, I want to meet this Marine fighter pilot. And so we met. He'd never even seen a picture of me, actually. We had one phone call and we met, and our first date, we were pretty much together from that point on. A perfect connection. And we got engaged, I guess, within about 8 months, and then married another 6 months later. So I married a Marine fighter pilot. He was actually transferred to California. We met in the Washington, D.C. area, but he was transferred to California for his next duty station while we were dating. And so he had to come back so we could get married. And then I went all in for military life. But I'll tell you, about 3 weeks after we got engaged, we sat down, and my husband's story is actually an interesting one too. He was not raised in a Christian home necessarily. His mom was Lutheran, but he didn't really have any kind of personal faith. And over in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, where he was stationed for Operation Enduring Freedom, he received the Lord. He was baptized in Kyrgyzstan. And all he did really while he was over there for war was go to church, read his Bible, you know, work out, and then fly his missions. He developed a really strong relationship with the Lord over there and kind of felt like God was nudging his heart that maybe ministry was going to be something he would do someday. But honestly, he didn't, you know, I knew about seminary and how a pastor became a pastor. Like I knew all that stuff, but that was just a foreign language for him. He didn't really know any of that. And so we had been engaged for 3 weeks and he sat me down and he's like, hey, there's something I need to talk to you about. And I was like, okay. And I'm thinking,
and I hear God snickering right? in the background.
Exactly. I'm like, uh-oh, what's he going to say? And he's like, I think I might be called into ministry, if that means anything. Like, I think I'm going to have to be a pastor someday. And I was like, just like deadpan. I'm like, yeah, I know. And he's like, what do you mean you know? And I'm like, yeah, I've known since I was 16 years old, I was going to marry a pastor. So
that's fantastic.
And so we finished. He was actually medically retired from the Marine Corps. We were there. Our first baby was born in California at our Naval Air Station there. And then he was planning on just separating because his time was up, but he was actually hurt. He hurt his back flying jets. And so we ended up being medically retired from the Marine Corps. And and that medical retirement, God is so amazing, Jackie. And I mean, still to this day, it blows my mind, because our plan was he was going to go to seminary, but I was working, and so I would continue to pay for it. But I was going crazy. I had, you know, a baby and a baby on the way, and felt like I couldn't do it. And he said, if this is what God wants, he's going to find a way to pay for it. And he did. We were medically retired, and that paid for us to go to Dallas, for him to go to Dallas Theological Seminary. It paid for our housing while we were there. It paid for books. It paid for everything. And so God just, you know, paved a way for us to start our ministry journey. And then we wanted to go back to the East Coast. We're both from, he's from New Jersey, I'm from Pennsylvania. And so we were going back to the East Coast, and we were going to plant a church there because they need more churches on the East Coast is what we believed. And we were outside of Dallas, where you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a church, right?
For real.
And so we were like, you know, we're out of here. We're just here for a short time. And then God would not open any doors for us to go back to the Northeast. I mean, we would see an ad that said pastors wanted, church planters wanted, and he would respond to that ad and just never get a call back. I mean, the doors were just glued shut for us to return to the Northeast. Meanwhile, a pastor at a large church in Dallas said, hey, I'm planting guys around here. If you want to plant a church, you know, in the suburb you live in, I will plant you. And so we ended up planting a church right there in the suburb we lived in through seminary, and we were there for about 7 years outside of Dallas, and then felt like our time planting was really a painful process for us, just to be honest. I have a huge heart for church planters' wives, because it's hard. And so, I mean, we started with money, but no people. And if I could do it again, I would say I'd want people and no money, not the other way around.
Wow.
But then felt like our time there had come to a close. And so now my husband is, he's just a pastor on staff at a mega church here in Austin, and he's over all of the church planting, and he gets to preach occasionally. So I have a little different life now than I did as a, you know, my guy preaches every Sunday morning kind of pastor's wife, but still very much remember those days and still feel, you know, feel the pressures, if you will, of being a pastor's wife, just in a new context.
Wow. I mean, just... first of all, to have to make such a, for him, making such a, you're just like going along, minding your own business, doing this, and now you're doing a completely different thing. And just to add some more fun to the mix, let's be church planners, not just not go into another church and be kind of mentored. And no, let's just jump in the deep end right from the get-go. Woo! I can't even imagine. I like church planning has, it's not something that we've ever done. After coming to the church where we are now, I'm like, okay, I see the value in church planting because you're starting from scratch, versus starting with what's already here.
Right.
And that's a tricky thing too.
Right.
So, because we were not lead pastors until we came here 9 years ago, almost 10. And so, wow, I can't even imagine being a church planter. I just can't even imagine, but how excited, I mean, that's one way to, get a real good initiation into being a pastor or a pastor's wife.
Yeah. it was a really hard season for us, honestly. I mean, there's definite high points as I look back on it and think, you know, wow, that was a sweet time. Like, that was sweet when things finally, I mean, there were so many days though, and I think this is the way it is for many couples in ministry, but so many Sunday nights when it was like, we can't do this anymore, you know, God, you're going to have to give us the grace to make it, you know, through this week and to another Sunday. And then just to watch him show up and sustain us, you know, to watch my husband go from Sunday night, just lower than low, I don't think I can wake up tomorrow morning and do this anymore, to Wednesday, re-energizing him, and Thursday, he's preparing the sermon, and Friday, he's, you know, energized and ready to do it again the next Sunday. I mean, just watching God sustain us day by day was huge, huge for us.
Wow. And now things are, so what does a typical Sunday now look like for you?
Yeah, I have a lot more flexibility now. I mean, and our kids are older too. When we planted,
that makes a difference.
We had three that were four. I guess they were three and under. And then we actually started the church outside of our house the day my fourth child was born, essentially like that same week. So I had a bunch of babies. And so he would go, you know, he'd have to be gone or, you know, well, I mean, really, when we planted the church, he had to go pick up the trailer and pick up the coffee and all the things. He did all the things. And so that was hard. I couldn't really help him. I didn't have any capacity to. And then likewise, he couldn't help me, right? I had to get everyone dressed and in the van and, you know, and then out of the van and into church by myself. Now my kids are older and we actually live just a half mile from our church. And so things are a lot easier now. I mean, you know, if he preaches, he's there, you know, from 5 a.m. until 3 p.m. on a Sunday. But it's not the same, as when we carried the weight of the whole the whole shebang, if you will. Right. It's a little different to not be in that lead pastor role anymore. So that's been a good break for us, quite honestly.
Oh, that's so good. And you're in Austin.
Yes.
I've never been there, but, you know, you just what the rest of the world thinks about Austin. Austin is weird. So
yeah, it weird. Yeah. I never wanted to move here for that reason. I like Dallas. I'm like, things aren't weird in Dallas. Things are weird in Austin. But let me tell you, I love Austin. And part of the reason I love it is Dallas is, and it has a reputation for this, so I'm not like being, I'm not saying anything no one said before, but Dallas is a little bit more pretentious, right? Austin is just, it's okay to just be yourself. And so just even in terms of things that the issues I work on and women I talk to in the realm of body image and comparison, it's a different deal here than it is in Dallas, where you have to wear a certain brand and, you know, that
right.
Have makeup on when you go to the grocery store, those kinds of things. Like down here, people are a lot more laid back about that sort of stuff. So it's been interesting to observe.
I just think Texas is just the most incredible state anyway. Like my aunt moved to Houston, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. She'd lived in Tennessee. I live in Tennessee right now, but she hated living in Tennessee. She lived in Memphis, didn't like it at all. And I couldn't understand because I think Tennessee is wonderful, but I live in a totally different area.
Yeah.
But anyway, she moved to Texas and she became one of those obnoxious Texas people. Yeah. So I went to visit her and I was like, oh my goodness, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing state.
There's a lot of civic pride here for sure.
That is no joke. And I don't know. I loved it when I went there. I was a little disappointed I didn't see more cowboys when I was there. But anyway, so I've been to Houston and I have been up to Dallas-Fort Worth area because my best friend lives there.
Okay.
That drive from Houston to Dallas-Fort Worth is not something I would sign up for real quick again. Terrifying, but the traffic's crazy. But you're out there in Austin, so awesome. Yeah. And I went to San Antonio because, of course, I had to go to the Alamo, which was really cool. But I've never been to Austin. I just know Austin is the keep Austin weird. And then there's a lot of tech people out there, like a lot of people that do tech things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of podcasters who are out of Austin.
Right. Yeah, we live in a very high tech. I mean, Apple, Google. You know, I think Amazon is on its way here. Tesla's on its way here. So it's a very high tech area. A different vibe there too.
Definitely, so, that's awesome. Well, I want to get into the top your life message. I don't know if you want to call it that, but this message that God's given to you for women, and how did this even come about? You're talking about body image, and how did this start?
Well, so my struggle with body image started like when I was in elementary school, and by high school I was trying to see how long I could go without eating. By college, I lost my period my sophomore year of college, and so I had a lot of disordered eating things going on, but quite candidly, didn't know that there was anything unusual about them because every woman that I knew worried about how much she ate and how many calories were in that and, you know, what she could do to burn off those calories or what size she was wearing or, you know, all of those, you know, outside size appearance things seemed to consume most of the women that I knew. And so I believed really truly in my heart of hearts that this was just part of being a woman. And so I didn't think that I had any kind of disordered eating, because I just thought everyone I knew obsessed over how much they ate and was on a diet and then another diet and then another diet. I just thought that was how you lived. And so it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s that God started to really reveal to me some things that I had missed in this arena. I went so far, Jackie, in my late 20s to becoming a fitness instructor, even though I had another job. I worked in politics for a while, and then I was vice president of a nonprofit organization called the National Fatherhood Initiative. It's a great organization that helps dads be involved in the lives of their children. And so I had a great job with meaning and purpose. And all I cared about was, if I could just be a fitness instructor, then maybe I would feel better about my body. Then maybe people would think that my body was good enough if I could just be like one of those gym people. And so I got a part-time job teaching fitness classes at a gym, like in addition to my real job, and really thought that that would solve it for me, that would fix my body image issues, because I would have finally proven to everyone that I was good enough in that arena. And it didn't. It didn't at all. It just kind of made it worse. And then I thought, well, once I got married, that would fix it, because I thought, well, if there's one group of women that doesn't struggle with body image, it has to be married women, right? Because they already have a man. And now I know that's like the biggest joke ever, right? And then I got married, and I realized, I mean, I think my struggle with body image just intensified at a much bigger level than I ever knew it could, because now I had a man, but now I felt like I was in some sort of competition with every other woman in the world that he could possibly see, thinking, how in the world am I going to stay married once he sees that she's more pretty than I am? She's, you know, she's skinnier than I am and all the things, right? And so I was really driving myself crazy on the inside with these issues. And then once I got married, I was very generous enough to drive my husband crazy with these issues as well. You know, always, I was kind of always putting it on him, like, you know, well, you must not be doing a good job as a husband, because I should feel like I am like just the awesomest. So this must be about you, and you're not saying the right things, and you're not doing the right things. And the problem wasn't him. It was all inside of me. And so, like I started to say, in my early 30s, God really started to work on some of these issues inside of me. And my husband was in seminary at that point, and we were involved in a church, and they were doing a little seminar kind of thing. And it was an all day just retreat, I guess you'd call it. And they were talking about different health issues. And since I was a fitness instructor, they were like, maybe you'd want to talk about this. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm game. And so I prepared my presentation, but I really felt like what I needed to talk about was more just how sometimes what we look like on the outside doesn't match how we feel on the inside. And so that was kind of my first like entree into talking about body image. And then I was invited by a local MOPS group to talk on the topic of body image. And so then I was like, okay, well, I need to just work this out. What do I want to say about my body image journey? And so then after that, I felt like it was time to write a book. But I wanted to write a book on marriage. I've always wanted to write a book on marriage. So I'm like, I'm just going to write a book on marriage. I got lots of good material. It's going to be hilarious, because I like to make people laugh. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to write a funny book on marriage. It'll be awesome. And I sat down to write that book, and those words just would not come out. And so I was talking to my husband about it, just like, oh, I can't get the words out. And he was like, well, that's because you're supposed to be writing about body image. And I was like, no, that would mean that people would read what I think about in this body image arena. And I do, those are secret things. Women don't talk about those things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and really, quite honestly, Jackie, most of what I had read that was out there, I mean, because this is something I struggled with since I was a teenager, well, really even a preteen. And so I had read every book out there on the topic, right? And so I knew that I was fearfully and wonderfully made. I knew that I was God's masterpiece. I knew that he had made me for a purpose. Like I knew all the verses, all the references. I knew it, but it did not matter one bit to my heart, because I still cared more about how could I make myself more physically beautiful. That was still going to be my way out of this issue. And so So I started writing my story, and and then the rest is history, I guess. I started writing about body image, and that's what the first book, Compared to Who, is about. And then eventually, because the book was titled Compared to Who, I had a lot of people say, isn't this a book about comparison? Like, when are you going to talk about comparison more broadly? And so that's what led to my second book, The Burden of Better, which is really a book about how we compare ourselves in every way, right? Like, who's the best mom? Who's got the best marriage? Who's got the prettiest home? Who's got the best lawn? Who's got the best car? Who's got the best job? You know, who's most successful? All those things. And so that's really what Burden Better is about.
And I've started reading The Burden is Better, and I've got a lot of highlights in it. And I think I'm only to the second chapter. It's really, really good. And I the concept of better being a burden was like, I mean, it's like something, I guess it was back in my head, but for you to lay it out in just those three words, the burden of better, well, that's four words, the burden of better. I was like, oh my goodness. It really is.
Yeah. Right.
And right. I never even thought about it.
Well, you know, you think about, like, our culture is all about goal setting and self-improvement and all those things, right? And so those are just things that we've grown up with, that we've just naturally come to accept as, like, this is normal. Like, we should all be trying to be better. Like, how could you ever argue against someone wanting to be better? Isn't it good to want to be better?
Exactly.
But the problem is, and to put this in, like, a goal-setting context, the problem is better is not a definable objective, right? Like, you will never reach better.
Always more better.
There's always more better, right? Like, better, I teach at our children's homeschool, I teach an English class, and better is actually a comparative adjective, right? So better only exists in the context of comparison. You cannot have better without comparing yourself to someone else. And so if we make our life goal that we want to be better, it's always going to beg the question, better compared to who? Grammatically, it should be compared to whom. So if you have some grammar snobs listening, I'm a grammar snob too, but compared to whom just sounded way too uppity for me.
That's your Dallas coming out in you.
Right. There you go. I've had people write me mean letters. Like, I am sure you're a nice person, but you should know it's compared to whom, not compared to who. But anyway, so if you're looking for better, you'll never reach it. And or like I like to say, comparison's ladder has no top rung, right? You can just keep climbing and climbing and climbing. And sometimes you're going to be ahead and sometimes you're going to be behind. But there's no destination you'll ever reach when better's your goal.
Oh, man. That's a powerful truth. It's a ouchy truth.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say right now, right in the middle of the podcast, that your the both of these books that you've written, I'll link those in the show notes because I know people are going to want them, because your style of writing is very easy to read. But it's at the same time, it's really wow. Makes you think. So because I am, if you say the word goal, project, time management, that makes my heart race. It makes me so happy.
Yeah.
I love those topics. I totally can see how everything you're saying. But let's talk about body image some more. And I'm going to, is it time to throw out that question I asked you?
Sure.
That I now don't remember how beautifully I worded it before when we weren't recording. But it was along the lines of, how do I know when I don't know if balance is the right word, because balance is kind of tricky, but I mean, we do need to kind of take care of the body God gave us.
Right.
But how do we know when that is going over the line into this whole, we're going into the unhealthy side of that?
Right. So yes. So I get that this is the number one question I get. And I mean, especially from church women. And so as pastors' wives, like, this is probably something all of your listeners have either said or, you know, at a minimum heard or told someone, right? But, you know, our body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, right? So you have to take care of your temple. But here's one way to tell where that line is, right? Like, what's a temple used for? Well, a temple is used for worship. But a temple is...
I had that answer. Yeah. I was going to have an answer.
Ding, ding. You got it. But a temple is not to be worshipped. Right? right? Oh, like, you know,
wow.
To modernize the context on this, like, just think about our churches. Our churches, our church buildings are useful for our practice of worship, right? We come together, at least we did before COVID, but we come together and we use the building, we use the temple to worship God, okay? But wouldn't it be weird if we started worshiping the buildings? Like, oh, this building, we love this building. Oh, all praise to this building. Like, that would just be weird, right? And that would be obviously, like, in contradiction to scripture, okay? So I think what happens too often is we rely on this concept of our body is the temple. We have to take care of the temple. But where we cross the line is when we start thinking about how the temple can get worship. And I don't think we do this consciously, okay? I think this is very subconscious, right? But here's just a little litmus test. If when you get dressed for church on Sunday morning, you're getting dressed with the purpose of, I hope someone tells me I look nice. I'm going to wear this because people are going to tell me, they're going to think I look nice. I bet everyone will be looking at me today because I look really good. So I'm going to go to church and I'm going to wear this and people are going to be like, oh, wow, Heather, you look great. Have you lost a couple pounds? Wow, that color is so good on you. And that's where my heart is, right? At that point, Jackie, I am treating my temple as something that I want to be worshiped instead of using my temple for the worship of God. So another way I like to frame this is in the context of Matthew. In the book of Matthew, Jesus lays out the treasure principle, right? It's like where your treasure is, your heart will be also. But if you've done any studying on, you know, treasure and how you figure out what your treasure is, a lot of people say your treasure is where your time and your money go. And I like to up the ante a little bit because I think in this body image arena, it's not just our time and our money, but it's also where our thoughts are. And so I know for me specifically, like, I had obsessive thoughts about what I looked like most of the time. I would get on the scale in the morning and I would think about what that number was most of the day. I mean, yes, I had life and activities that would interrupt, but this was my train of thought. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is really important to, like, just stop and take stock. Like, what I tell, I mean, pastors' wives, we have to go to church, right? You know, so this example doesn't work as perfectly with pastors' wives. But, you know, I've reached out to women, I've talked to women where it's like, okay, listen, honey, if you have a Louis Vuitton bag, right? And there's nothing wrong with having a Louis Vuitton bag. I don't own one. But if you have a $1,000 handbag, but you're putting $5 in the church offering, then you have a misplaced treasure, right? Mm-hmm. Like your treasure's not going in the right spot. Mm-hmm. Or if you never miss a spin class at the gym, but you don't have time for small group or to make it to worship service, well, then you got a misplaced treasure, right? And so pastors' wives, we can kind of skirt around that, right? Because, you know, hey, like, we serve the church. So for us, probably the biggest question is, where are your thoughts? What are you thinking about all day long? And your thoughts are valuable, right? Like, our thoughts steer us. Our thoughts determine what actions we take, right? We have 80,000 thoughts a day. How many of our thoughts are focused on what could I do to get more worship for my temple? And again, not that anyone's couching it in those terms at all, but what can I do to look better? What can I do to change my body? What, like, focused on that instead of how can I use my body to serve God? How can I be okay with the fact that, okay, I am only 5'5", right? And I always looked at those women, those models who were 5'10", and thought, if I could just be like that, okay, I can't make myself grow 5 inches. But, you know, maybe if I could just get really skinny, then I would look taller and put on some heels, you know, and then I can get the look, right? And it wasn't until a couple years ago when I really very clearly felt God telling me, you know, Heather, I didn't make you look like Heidi Klum or any of these other supermodels, because I don't have any modeling in mind for your life. Like, I didn't create you to be a model because I don't want you to be a model. But I have given you everything you need physically to do what I have for you. And that was really encouraging for me to finally be like, you know what? Yeah, this is kind of silly that I feel like I need to look like that, because my pictures are not going to be in a magazine someday wearing jeans, right? That's just not what anyone wants to see. Okay. But he did give me things he wants me to do. It gave me a mouth to talk. It gave me short fingers that type really fast to write books. And so what does it look like to live my life just being content, knowing that, you know what, even though God didn't give me beauty in the same way he gave those other women beauty, he gave me all the beauty I need to fulfill the purpose he has for me. And God sees beauty so differently than we do. I mean, that's another whole, we could do a whole episode on just, you know, our culture's definition of beauty and how to reconcile what culture says is beautiful versus what God says is beautiful. But yet, you know, that's a whole big ball of wax, right? Mm-hmm. But if we really all stop and think about it, the people that we see as most beautiful, we see them that way because of things that are coming out of their inside, right? Like because of the light that shines through them, because of kindness and love that radiates through them. I mean, I use Miley Cyrus as this example, and I feel kind of bad that I do, but I think Miley Cyrus is an example of a empirically beautiful woman, right? Like she's mm-hmm. got aesthetically pleasing features, mm-hmm. but we've all seen her act so ugly that when you look at her, you're like, ugh, right? And so it's this lie that beauty tells us, that the body image idol is what I call it. It's a beauty and body image idol that tells us if you just look more like that, then everyone will think you're beautiful. You'll have everything you've ever wanted in life. You'll have all their love, all their affection, all their worship, all the things. Life will be easy for you. But then if we just look at the cover of a magazine and we see this woman and then we read the headlines around them, we can see that's not true. I mean, how many beautiful women do we know from Hollywood that have been cheated on?
Right.
Stay married because he was addicted to porn or he left her, or, you know, all those things, right? Or that had serious issues with addiction, right? Or depression or anxiety. Like beauty doesn't give us those things that it promises it will give us. And so one of my big parts of my mission is just to kind of unveil the truth that beauty lies to us. The world's beauty does, not God's mm-hmm. beauty, but the world's mm-hmm. beauty lies to us. And if we chase it, whew, we're going down the wrong trail.
I know I'm so much harder on myself mm-hmm. than Absolutely. Anybody else is. And I've noticed since COVID and we went online, I'm on camera so much more.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I edit. I'm the editor. Like I'm the social media person. I do anything basically tech. That people see, and I have to look at myself all the time now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm having to edit to that point. Like, I cut off our sermon. Like, what people get on YouTube is no. Now we do the worship because we got a better sound system. Okay, so that's not when it was. When am I? Oh, when I'm doing it for the podcast of our sermon, I have to edit to the point where my husband starts speaking.
Okay.
Before he speaks, I do the greeting. Mm-hmm. So I'm having to see myself almost every week because I seem to manage to hit it really well. Like I go in about 35 minutes into the message or into that Sunday's service. And it's almost always me doing the greeting at that mm-hmm. point. And I have to look at myself mm-hmm. and I think about myself. Mm-hmm. I don't really think what other people think about me. I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, why did I wear that? Or I look so, because I'm 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And I did, like the first week of COVID, I was like, I will wear heels every week because I look real short and real just, that's not what I look like in real life, is it? I don't know. But anyway, so I started wearing heels. But I'm really hard on myself because I have to see myself on camera every week.
Yeah.
But I don't judge people with the same.
I have an answer. Do you want?
Yes. Do you want help an me out? Like, you're my face. Okay. I'm sure you're looking at my face, and you're just like, "Girl needs help. She needs help."
Okay. Well, so there's two main things here. Okay. Thing one is we tend to objectify ourselves, and objectify is a word that we're really familiar with in terms of what like men do when they see a picture of a woman, right? Like mm-hmm. they objectify her. But we tend to do this to ourselves, right? Because when you look at a picture of you, you just see yourself as one dimensional. You just see yourself physically. You are only critiquing and analyzing your physical image. When I see you, or when your friends see you, or when people in your congregation see you, they don't just see your physical image. They see, oh, your heart, your exuberant personality. Like they see all those things. And when they think of Jackie, they think of the package that is Jackie. When you look at a one-dimensional or video image of yourself, you don't give yourself that kind of grace and consideration.
No, I give myself no grace.
Right. You're marking yourself up like a kid's paper who got the answers wrong. Like, oh, this should be different. This is like, you know, like you're getting ready to be Photoshopped. And that's really objectification. But then the second thing, and this is a little bit more of a put your seatbelt on kind of point here. But this is something that God showed me when I was writing Burden of Better. And it's out of 1 Corinthians 4, verse 3. And Paul talks about, he's already established his resume, right? Like we know, everyone, pastors' wives, we know the passage. You know, we know that Paul was, the best of the best, had a great resume, right? So he's already done that. But he's talking to the Corinthians and he's telling them that he doesn't care what they think of him. Okay. So like, okay, we can, Paul's our poster child, don't worry about approval of others. Right. But then he goes further than that. And he says, I care very little if I am judged by you or any human court. And then he says, in fact, I don't even judge myself. I only allow God to judge me, right? And so, and we read that, we're like, of course, God's the only one that judges hearts, like only God should judge us. But I think that I don't even judge myself part is really important for those of us who struggle in this body image arena, because what often happens is God has his set of things that he expects of us, but then we have this extra list of, oh, I should also weigh this amount, and I should have, look like this in this article of clothing. Mm-hmm. And I should, be more like this person or whatever your list is. We have this like separate list. And I think the hard thing for most of us is we're like, I'm totally willing. Oh God, I love you. I love your word. I love your standards. That's all good. I'm good with all that. And I can just be content resting in all that. It's just my list of stuff that I have to wrestle with. This is my list, God. This is the stuff that makes me acceptable to me, right? This is the stuff that will please the God of me, right? And I have to wonder if God's not saying, oh, dear one, you don't have to please yourself. Like, that's not what I expect of you. I expect you to please me, right? You don't have to keep all of those self-expectations. Like, the Bible tells us to die to self daily, not to try to meet our own expectations of ourselves daily, right? Like, our mission, our goal here as believers, followers of Jesus Christ, is to reflect him, to live by his words, right? To rest in his grace, not to stress ourselves out with all these extra rules that we put on ourselves because we think we have to match some culture's standard of beauty. So I don't know. I hope that's helpful.
Wow. You can see me, so you can see. You probably see I have tears. That was super powerful and puts a totally different spin. Well, not a different spin, but a further spin, a deeper spin on what we know, but we don't.
Right.
I preach to my girls, my ladies all the time. You are not an exception to what God says about everyone else. You are not the exception.
Right.
But why am I the exception? Like,
right.
I say that, but I still put myself as, but I can justify why it matters about me. Anyway, I don't know if I make any sense because my head's all in a jumble, but this is so good.
Yeah.
If everybody doesn't run out to buy your book, they're
Well, one thing that one thing that I heard in church growing up was I go to the women's conferences and they'd be like, God created all women beautiful. I mean, I've heard that. I mean, I've gone to speak places and like that's been like the message before I get up there, the message after. And I am absolutely down with that as long as you mean God's version of beauty, right?
Right.
God did not create every woman equally physically beautiful. Otherwise, we have a real problem in his word when he tells us that Rachel was hot and Leah was not, right? But I remember as a kid in Sunday school, like my Sunday school teacher just kind of glossed right over that, right? Like, oh yeah, well, Leah was probably really beautiful, just had dim eyes. But as I studied that passage more extensively, like God chooses words on purpose. Mm-hmm. And the word but is in there, right? But it's a comparison mm-hmm. word again, right? It's letting you know for sure that Rachel was prettier than her sister. Mm-hmm. And I think in our culture, that's pretty offensive that God would say that, right? Like to us, it's like, oh my word, how can you say that one woman is more beautiful than another? And where's the asterisk in my Bible that says Leah had dim eyes, but great thighs? Like, you know, it's not there, right? So it's okay for God to go right out and say one woman was physically beautiful and one woman was not. But then which woman was in the lineage of Jesus? It's Leah, right? Wow. Really, God had a tremendous purpose. I mean, she had heartache. Like the story of Leah is one that I want to write a book on because I feel for her. I mean, I can't imagine all that she went through mm-hmm. and how she felt being, you know, her father tricked Jacob into marrying her and all of those things, like heartache. But he chose her. He had a purpose for her life. She was the mother of Judah, the line of Judah is where Jesus comes from. I mean, he knew what he was doing and he equipped her physically with everything she needed physically to carry out his purpose for her life. And so I feel like we as Americans and just American culture, we get caught up in like making ourselves feel like we're all physically beautiful to keep up with the world's standards. And, you know, and what that's turned into culturally is this whole thing of like body positivity and, you know, be proud of the body you've got. We've got women that are in Christian circles preaching body pride. And I feel like pride is never God's answer for anything, right? Like God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. Like having more pride in what you have is not the way to freedom. And so I just feel like there's a lot of confusing messages coming at us and coming at the women in our churches.
Yes.
And we need to be really clear on these issues. I mean, there are women leaders that are considered Christian leaders on Christian book labels telling the women in your church that they need more body pride and that they need to just think about themselves more. And my heart is for, especially for pastors' wives, for us to have this message straight in our heads so we can help our women, because it's demonic. It's idolatry. It's going to lead them to unhealthy places. and it's not what God has for them.
Oh, wow. That's so good. So true. You're absolutely, absolutely right. I told you were an expert. See, I said that before I hit record. I wasn't kidding. This is so good. And I mean, pastors' wives have they have what every other woman has, that struggle.
Right.
And we have the added expectation of that we put on ourselves, because I am definitely the worst at putting expectations on myself. But we are more public. I mean, we're not famous.
Right.
I mean, you
people are looking.
But, right. But I mean, people do look at us.
Right.
And if I'm so caught up, when I'm so caught up in what people are thinking about me, I will catch myself doing that and then realize that they weren't looking at me. They are looking at me because I'm their pastor's wife, but I mean, they're not thinking the way I'm thinking. The cutest lady in our church, the most fashionable lady in our church. Uh-huh. She's, I just love her. She's so sweet and she always looks so put together and everything. I will walk into church and go up there and I will mess up the greeting, which is every week almost. I say something dumb. I don't know what happens when I get up there. But anyway, I'll come down and I'll have been thinking about that or whatever. And she'll just walk by me and she'll be like, "You're just so cute." And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, first of all, I'm 51 years old. Mm-hmm. Who is cute when they're 51? I don't know. But the first time she said something like that, I was like, what is she doing? What's her game? What is she trying to get at? But I mean, it's not like she says that every week, but she has said it enough that I'm like, she genuinely, this is how she sees me.
Yeah.
And I totally don't see myself the way, like you were talking about earlier, about the dimensions that people see me in. She totally sees me as a different person than I remotely think I am at all.
Right. And I think you're so right, though. Like we walk into a room and we're thinking about ourselves and what other people think of us. I mean, that's just the way most women operate. And what would it be like, especially as pastors' wives, what would it be like to be able to walk into the room and think about everyone else and think about what I can do to edify everyone else instead of being there just like, oh, someone please tell me I look nice. Someone please affirm me. Like if we can get this straight in our heads that our affirmation isn't going to come from the crowd, it's not going to come from our husband, then it's going to come from our worth and value in Jesus alone. I mean, that frees us to do ministry the way Jesus did, right? Like Jesus wasn't looking for anyone to be like, oh, you are such a good guy. Okay, right. Now I've got enough to go on, right? Right. Like he wasn't looking for that, right? You know, and so, but we as humans, obviously we're never going to be as perfect as Jesus. I mean, there's huge amounts of grace for us. But you know, what would it look like to be free from that as we do ministry, to not have to enter the room in the same way that all of our other women are entering the room, wondering if they're okay compared to, you know, all the people they see. It just, I think it's a huge thing for us. And if we as pastors' wives can make a dent in it, we have some real opportunities to change the way the church looks, to change the way women in the church look.
That's so good. What are some practical things we can do besides buying your book? I know you won't say that, but I'll say it because I'm going to buy it as soon as we're done with this. But what are some really practical ways to, I mean, not surface things. Well, I mean, yeah. I guess if there are some surface things that might get us moving forward, but what can we do to move forward in this?
So I think one of the biggest things is you just have to start listening to what's going on in your head. Like that's kind of the place to start, because most of us have lived with these thoughts for so long, like probably, you know, since we were children in some cases, that they've become our friends. They're just so familiar. Like the, you look fat, you're not good enough. You should do better. You're lazy. You're not working hard enough. If only you could get this, then they would love you. Like start listening for those things and calling out the lies, right? That devil is a liar, but he's a good liar in that he doesn't tell us things that are super far-fetched. He tells us things that have, you know, like 80% truth in them, right? Mm-hmm. So you get on the scale and you gain a couple pounds and he tells you the truth. You're gaining weight. Okay, that's true. But then he tells you all this other stuff around that, right? Mm-hmm. You're gaining weight. That's why your husband hasn't been looking at you. That's probably why he's not interested in being with you. Meanwhile, he's, you know, you're building a church building or involved in all this stress, right? But the devil doesn't bring in those other details, right? He uses and twists what's around him for his advantage. So, that's those couple pounds. That's why your husband, you know, that's why he doesn't like you. You're so lazy. You haven't been exercising like you should. Ugh, you're so lazy. You'll never get your act together. Why? You know, that friend didn't call you back. I bet she's thinking you look fat. I bet she doesn't want to spend time with someone who looks fat like you. I mean, all of these thoughts, these go on in women's heads. And I know it because they go on in my heads and I coach women and they tell me and they're all the same. I mean, that's what's so unbelievable to me sometimes is to hear that he uses the exact same lines on everyone. And it just ticks me off because I'm like, how can we be so easy? Like, how can we, you know, be that easy to con? But so we hear these things. And so I think step one is you have to be aware of these lies that you're hearing and you've got to talk back to them. You've got to take those thoughts captive in submission to Christ, you know, like the New Testament tells us. Mm-hmm. But then you got to have an arsenal to fight back. And if you're trying to fight back with stuff that you picked up in culture, like, no, I am enough. No, I am awesome because God says I am. Like, self-esteem junk is not going to last you long term. Like, I am enough because Jesus Christ died for me. He thought I was valuable enough to pay for with his life. That's what makes me valuable. And so just knowing Bible truth and being able to talk back to those lies and those thoughts we have, I think that's step one. And then step two is, what are you feeding on? Right? Like I, even after I coach women through kind of recognizing the idol of body image and beauty and how to release that idol. And there's, you know, I think it's great news if you can discover that there's a sin root to this issue, right? Because we have a cure for sin, right? If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. There's a cure for sin. If this is just a normal girl issue, there's no cure for it. Sorry, you're female. You're just going to have to deal. But if there's a sin root to this issue, you have a cure. It's not something you're always going to have to fight. Now, we're always going to be tempted to fight it here on this planet, right? Until we get to heaven, temptation will always exist. But it doesn't mean that just because you're female, you should always have to fight this battle. Like, that's just a myth of culture. And so
But even once a woman has gone down the journey of recognizing this idol and confessing this idol and seeing how this idol has really run her life, because that's what this idol does. It takes over and it determines what we do and how we think and how many diets we go on, all those things. But after that path, it's like we got to take a hard look at what are you eating? And I don't mean food at all. I mean, if you're watching a show, and even if they're clothed, okay? Because, I mean, there's a whole – we could, again, spend – I could spend an hour telling you why you shouldn't watch a show with people not clothed in it. Okay. But hopefully with this crowd, that's already been established mostly. Right. But if you're watching a show, let's just say The Bachelor. Okay. I used to watch that show when I was single, but now I look at that show and I see all those women in bikinis and I think this is not helpful for me, right? I see these women in bikinis and I have a 2H test that I ask women to incorporate. And that's, is it holy and is it healthy, right? And just like you wouldn't want your husband to subscribe to a porn site or a porn magazine because looking at that would not be healthy or holy for him, we have to have the same standards for ourselves, ladies. And so if you're looking at something that causes you to have thoughts that are unhealthy and contrary to God's word about your worth because she's skinnier than you are and she looks better in a bikini than you do, that's not healthy for you, right? And then it's not holy, right? Because God didn't design us to compare ourselves to each other and in those ways, right? Like that's, we're missing out on what God says true beauty is. And also, we're affecting our marriages. Like I think a lot of women, they are very clear on the fact that if your husband looks at lust, that's going to have an impact on your marriage. But if you're looking at a lot of images of women that look a certain way, that follow culture standard of beauty, and you're feeling bad about yourself, guess what? I've never met a woman who can watch something like that online and then jump into bed and feel good about herself. It just doesn't work that way. So we're hurting ourselves. I think it's Psalm 137, verse 14, maybe, although I might need to have fact check that. but I think it's Psalm 137:14 says, turn my eyes from worthless things.
Yes.
Give me life in your ways. And I just think about how many worthless things we look at, right? And it's harmless entertainment. Oh, I need to veg. I just need to veg. I'm so stressed. And I get that. But if you're consuming things with your eyes that are putting messages and thoughts in your head that are hurting yourself and hurting your marriage, no, these are worthless things that need to be just, you know, exited out. And it might just be on Instagram. I mean, you might just have to unfollow people. And it might be people that you're friends with, right? It might be awkward because you might have a friend that is always like dieting and always posting pictures of how much skinnier she's gotten. But that might cause for you some unhealthy thoughts and responses and some spiraling to a place that you don't need to go and God doesn't want you to go. So it might just be a simple unfollow, hide, you know, those kind of things you have to do to protect any freedom that you've gained in this arena.
Wow. This is so, so good. I'm so glad we had this chat. Even if nobody else gets anything out of it, I'm getting so much out of it. But that's really why I wanted you on the podcast. I just needed to get these things out. No, this has been good. I know that the ladies that are listening are like screaming and shouting and everything while they're listening to this. This is so good. I hope they're listening when they can really think about this. And I'm already thinking I'm definitely going to go back and listen to this again. I definitely can't wait to go listen to this again. This has been so good. I would definitely want people to get your book. And how else can they connect with you?
Yeah, I'm on comparetowho.me is the simplest way. I do have a free download. It's a walk to lose the weight of comparison. So basically, I am your instructor on a guided walk where I talk you through, okay, what's weighing you down? What are you comparing yourself? What ways are you comparing yourself to others? And how do you find freedom? And so so it's a little bit of exercise and a little bit of coaching all in one free download. So I have that on my site. You can get my books on Amazon, all the places books are sold online. And then my podcast is Compared to Who.
I'm so excited. I have all the links to that in the show notes. Awesome. Now, before we go, I would love to have you pray over the ladies who are listening.
That would be my pleasure. Oh, dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much, God, for the truth that you love us and that you love us right where we're at, God. And I just pray for every woman listening that you will free her from the burden of better, that you will free her from these impossible standards that she's put on herself, that she feels that she needs to meet in order to make herself happy or to find contentment or to find peace or to find rest. And you will show her the truth that rest is not found in meeting our own standards, but rest is only found in you and in understanding your grace for us, God. I just pray freedom for every woman listening today, no matter where she's at on her journey. If body image is a struggle, an obsession, a stronghold in her life, God, I pray that you will break the shackles of that off of my sister, off of my friend, so that she will be free to minister to those around her without this burden. God, if it's just comparison, if she's just caught up in wondering if she's good enough as compared to her or her or her and feeling like she measures short all the time, God, I just pray that you would free her from the grip, from comparison's lie, and from the grip of envy and covetousness and all of those other sins that hide themselves as comparison. God, I pray you will show her the truth of what has really ensnared her, God, and lead her on a path to where she is free to worship you and free to just be who you have created her to be. God, I just pray your blessing over every woman listening, God, and I just pray your freedom over them as well. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Heather, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was amazing.
Oh, you're welcome, Jackie. My pleasure.
Well, that's it for my conversation with Heather, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you want to connect with her, be sure and check out the show notes at thepastorwifelife.com/096, as in episode 96. Until next time, Pastor's Wives, I want to encourage you to embrace the platform that God has given you as a pastor's wife with confidence and joy, knowing that He is good, He is faithful, and He is able to guide you on this journey.